Well, a big thank you to Laura Fox for keeping us entertained this afternoon. It is Tuesday, June 6th, and you're listening to Game On. Lots to get through between now and 7pm. Our focus on football this evening centres around all the headline news across the big European leagues, and we'll reflect on plenty of drama at home last night in the League of Ireland, and indeed talk through the standout ties of the FAI Cup first round draw.
Speaking of news headlines, we'll get the thoughts of Gary Murphy on the shock merger between the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, and yes, the Saudi-backed LIV Golf. They're all coming together. We'll also chat to Irish archer Adam Taylor about the upcoming World Archery Youth Championships that are coming to Limerick next month.
Hopefully I'll be able to wrap my head around that golf merger by the time we chat to Gary. All that plus the rest of today's sports news makes up the show. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet us at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
So Shane, the golf is the breaking news of the day, but there's a few other bits of news bopping around.
There is indeed, Ruby. Starting with cycling, Sam Bennett was edged out in a sprint finish on the third stage of the Criterium Dauphine. The Bora Hansgrohe rider looked all set for victory in the 191km stage after a strong lead out by teammate and compatriot Ryan Mullen, with Bennett moving to the front with less than 300m remaining. The Carrick-on-Shore man drifted towards the right, but it was the yellow jersey of Christophe Laporte who came with a final surge at the line to take stage victory for Jumbo Visma. Bennett sits in second in the points classification, 3 points behind Laporte in green. From cycling to snooker, Ruby, Liang Wenbo and Li Hang have been banned from snooker for life after an investigation into match fixing charges. 8 other Chinese players have been suspended for between 5 years and 4 months. Jason Ferguson, chairman of the World Professional Billiards and Snooker Association, said it has been heartbreaking to see some young talented players fall foul of the WPBSA conduct regulations through pressure exerted by 2 senior players, namely Liang Wenbo and Li Hang. This behaviour has been recognised as wholly unacceptable by the imposition of 2 lifetime bans from participating in recognised snooker. In any way, this outcome must be taken as a lesson to those who think they can avoid detection. If any players involved in fixing a snooker match, they will be caught and will face severe penalties. So there, I suppose, the news headlines that are almost shrinking with the news of this golf, Ruby, that we will get to in due course. It's just, that's bizarre, to say the least.
Oh, yeah. It'll be an interesting conversation with Gary Murphy. Who's right? Who's wrong? Where's the climb down come here? Those big comments and statements. Exactly. Oh, my God. Oh,
it's, yeah, it is. It's
money bad. Talks.
Money talks, indeed. Where will we start this evening, Ruby? We have a lot of football to get through. League of Ireland. Paul Curry is in studio. Paul, how are you, sir?
I'm very well. Trying to wrap my head around that golf news as well. And then you see Karen Benzema heading out that neck of the woods as well.
Yeah. And N'Golo Kante, I believe, is the latest player linked with a move to Saudi Arabia.
I mean, the numbers are frightening. There's so many zeros on the end of those salaries.
Oh, I know. Would you take the money, Paul, back in the heyday? You know, Sheffield Wednesday, UCD, Al Ilhal, could that be in the Paul Curry Wikipedia page?
Let's just get to the League of Ireland.
We will be chatting Benzema.
Good answer, Paul Curry. Avoid a comment at all costs on something like that.
Keep it close to home.
That was clever. That was sharp.
Mark Langdon will be dialing in to chat European football, as will Roddy Forsyth from the BBC. But keep it League of Ireland. FAI Cup draw was today. The Sports Direct FAI Cup, the new principal partners.
Kind to some, Paul Curry, wasn't it? Not so kind to others. It's amazing the way you could look at that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the ones that kind of jump up off the page are Dundalk and Rovers in the first round, and Bowes v Shells. So you're going to have 2 big sides and 2 sides who you'd expect to go deep into that competition exiting of the first round. And then you also have Drogheda and Sligo Rovers. So there's massive opportunities there for maybe some of the first division teams, even some of the Leinster senior and Munster senior league sides as well, to go through a couple of rounds there and see where the journey might take them. But certainly for Dundalk in particular, like getting Shamrock Rovers at home in the first round is a really difficult one. And I would imagine Shane, Damien Duff and Shells will be looking to do somewhat what they did last year, and the likes of Bowes as well have gone deep in the competition over the last 2 years. It's a really sticky draw.
Look, Shells looking to do what they did last year, knock Bowes out of the cup. Simple. Do you know what's annoying, actually? Shells are playing Bows the week before in the league. I hate when that happens.
Yeah, well, that's the difficulty, isn't it, with the 10-team league? Mm. That you come across the same teams. Some teams are meeting each other six times throughout the year, which is just bonkers.
Yeah.
But on current form and looking, obviously these fixtures will take place in the future and there's a break to come, but on current form and the way Shells are going, you know, they're banging form. If they can kind of keep that up, if they could add one or two, you could certainly see them going past Bows.
Mm. Well, one player that they'll have to replace is the Shelburne substitute goalkeeper. Now, I don't think Ruby. This must be a question. I didn't throw this at Ruby Cold here. Ruby, are you a Love Island fan?
No.
No. Okay, Paul.
I have watched a previous year. Like, I have to admit, Paul. That. I know, Ruby. Okay. I haven't watched the last couple of seasons, but I have watched it in years gone by.
Okay. Well, I didn't think I'd have to give a warning for, you know, turn off now for Love Island spoilers, but there is an Irishman going into the Love Island house, and it is a League of Ireland player. Scott van der Sluis, the Shelburne substitute goalkeeper, has left the club, I assume forever. I don't know if there's any way back for Scott and Damien Duff's plans now, but he's going into the Villa. So unfortunately, I'm sorry if I've ruined some of that. I'm not sure if the Love Island game on listenership on the Venn diagram.
I said that conversation went well with Damien.
I was just wondering, I was going to ask the same thing. I wonder what Damien Duff thought of that.
Sorry, Gaffer, I'm just going to have to go for the next 10 weeks.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, but it is.
You imagine him heading off down the tunnel, can't you? Kicking the wall, thinking, my God, where is his head?
The phrase game's gone gets thrown around a lot lately. But yeah, so it is Scott van der Sluis. I know there were scurrilous rumours online that it could have been Maddie Smith. I think Sean Boyd had an Instagram post, but it's not. It's Scott. So
yeah, that would have been a better question to me. Would I have gone into the Love Island Villa as opposed to Saudi Arabia?
Well, listen, you're a fan, so you've done your research. No? Not too late. Is there an age limit?
No, I'm certainly not in the shape now to be going on the television.
Okay, all right. Let's bring it back full circle to football itself. So there was a full billing of League of Ireland football last night. Shamrock Rovers had a 3-0 win against their Rovers compatriots, Sligo Rovers out west. St. Pat's had a big win at home to Derry City, 4-1. Cork City, Bows, drama aplenty in Turner's Cross. Cork 1-2-1 late on. Dundalk, Patrick Hooban helped himself to a hat-trick in a 4-1 victory for Dundalk at home to UCD. And Shells had a 3-2 win over Drogheda United. So I suppose looking at the top two, Rovers now have a 4-point advantage over Derry. We're talking to Alan Colley. Rovers fully deserved of the victory, but that's a big blow for Derry now, and they're on a tough run of form.
It is, and it's kind of, it's changed the landscape of the league and kind of where the two teams are sitting over the last 2 weeks. And I thought Shamrock Rovers looked very good against Dundalk, and I thought again last night they looked very strong. I think Gaffney looks like he's got up and running, and they won't believe, Shane, that they've had so many drop points already this season. They've had so many sending offs and they're still 4 points ahead of Derry. I mean, they couldn't have given the chasing pack any more opportunities to either go ahead or stay ahead of Shamrock Rovers, and they're heading into the break now and they'll have at least a 4 point gap, and they look like they've started to really kick into gear and get at least the players who were so prominent last year back up to scratch. Aaron Green, you saw him score against Dundalk, he's come on and he scored against Sligo. I thought Johnny Kenny looked good, Jack Byrne looked good, clean sheet, 3 goals. That is what you expect from Shamrock Rovers.
But Rovers only lost 6, Paul. Drawn 6, lost 3, and their goal difference is still plus 22. Like, they do look on paper so far ahead of the opposition.
Yeah, I was thinking about this earlier on, and Ruby, I would expect that they will kick on. I think they'll start to find a lot of form as they come towards Europe. They have the squad and they have the depth to juggle all the competitions and go deep in competitions. And if the chasing pack are to remain as inconsistent as they have done, I think Rovers will win this by 10 plus points. I really do.
Like, once the summer break happens, they've UCD this week, and then I think one summer break, post summer break, it's just going to be Rovers and then a mini battle for Europe.
Well, they're not going to have the situations that they've had in the first 20 games with the amount of sending offs and kind of the kamikaze that's happened in certain games and the points that they've dropped that they typically wouldn't have done. I don't see that continuing. I think they'll go on a kind of Man City like form where they'll win game after game after game. They'll find form around Europe and they'll just stretch out that gap, and that sets them then up perfectly for Europe, whereby even if they drop a couple of points, it doesn't matter too much because I think the gap will be too big.
Paul, Rory Higgins looked bitterly disappointed in Richmond Park last night. I must say, I enjoyed, not enjoyed, but I thought his interview was so honest afterwards about their performance and about his team.
He has to be worried about this team. I mean, a lot of us were tipping Derry to be the ones that would go neck and neck with Shamrock Rovers, but I mean, performances over the last couple of weeks have been really, really poor. You know,
losing to Sligo, drawing with Shells, and now that result off the back of them 4 wins previous. Like, I mean, I know his injuries contend with, but.
Yeah, and the Sligo one was the key one, because that was the opportunity to put the gap to 4 points ahead of Shamrock Rovers, and that would have been a really good opportunity to just put a bit of daylight between themselves, and now they've gone 3 games without a win. I think what's even more worrying, Ruby, is the fact that McElhenney went off, Duffy went off, and Dumigan went off, which is kind of like the core group and the core base of their squad, the kind of real experience of winning titles with Dundalk. And if you take those three players out of the squad, and if you see the performance from when those players went off and how they finished the game, I thought they looked really ragged. I think the Owen Doyle goal was a perfect example. It's just one ball that's cleared 40, 50 yards and Owen Doyle is in. Mark Connolly looked like he was...
He was pinging balls around, and he's like such a good ball-playing defender, but... getting caught in your hell, with respect to Owen Doyle, but getting caught and getting blitzed for pace like that.
I wasn't quick, but I think I would have given Mark Connolly a race last night. And I played up Mark and I like him, but he doesn't look fit. He's been out with injury for a while, and he got left for dead by Owen Doyle. And I just thought, God, if that's kind of a snapshot of where Derry are at the moment, one long ball over the top, get caught out. You can have all the possession you like, but if you're not going to be able to defend and keep the opposition out, you're asking for trouble. And I can understand Rory's, he's gone through a difficult time. He lost his brother, and he had an interview with Dan McDonnell. He was open about that. But the performance on the pitch for Derry right now, they need the break and they need it quick.
Is... in terms of, and we will wrap up League of Ireland, get on to European football, but Derry have Bows at home on Friday. Is that the worst kind of match, considering what happened Bohemians last night, for those who aren't aware? Cork were leading, Bows equalised in the 87th or so minute, and it was bizarre. They grabbed the ball from the goal, went back, it's like, let's kick off, let's go grab the winner. And what happens from the resulting kickoff? Cork go score the winner.
Cork have been brilliant in the last couple of weeks. That's 4 wins on the trot with Liam Buckley. I mean, it's kind of like an example of why you do change your manager. Not that I know Colin Healy left, but they've got a bit of a bounce and they've really kicked on. But Bows are probably similar to Derry in that sense. Like, the last 5 games only picked up 5 points, and they started the season so well. Now, they're still not too far away from Shamrock Rovers and from Derry and from Pats, and they've a game in hand, but they're just so inconsistent at the moment. Don't seem to be scoring enough goals. I always look at Bows. Afolabi and Akintunde, they don't score enough goals. Somebody needs to pick up 15-20 goals, and if they could do that, you just feel they'd have a lot more threat in that final third. Defensive, they seem to be quite well set up, they press the ball quite well, but I just feel like they're lacking a bit in that final third. And last night was another poor result. You take your point to get out of there, and you put another point on the board and stay a little closer to the chasing pack. But yeah, Bows, Derry, Dundalk, St Pat's, all of them have had little spells where they've struggled to pick up points this season.
Absolutely, will be interesting to see. Rovers, UCD, Derry, Bows, Cork, Dundalk, Shell, Sligo, Drogheda, Pats are the fixtures this Friday. Marie and the gang will be previewing those later in the week. But Ruby and Paul, Mark Langdon is on the line now, because we're going to turn our attention to European football and across the continent. Where shall we start? Mark Langdon, firstly, welcome along. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. You're okay?
I'm very well. La Liga. So, Barcelona are champions, and the Champions League has gone to Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid and Real Sociedad. But Paul mentioned at the top of the show, I suppose, let's just kind of get into a bit of transfer news with Real Madrid. Karim Benzema will leave as a free agent and could reportedly be earning up to €100 million for playing a couple of years in Saudi Arabia. It's not bad if you can get it.
It's not, obviously, Saudi Arabia very much sort of dominating the sporting headlines at the moment, with the sort of LIV Golf, Newcastle, the team that sort of got their backing as well, riding high in sort of qualifying for the Champions League. You know, Ronaldo's already playing in Saudi Arabia. They've got Benzema. They've been linked with Messi. They're also been linked with other sort of stars like N'Golo Kante and also Heung-Min Son. So it does feel very much like that there is a sort of a movement towards Saudi Arabian football, and a lot of interest really in terms of putting some financial might behind it. I think the long-term goal is for Saudi Arabia to host a World Cup, and getting players like Ronaldo and Benzema certainly helps in that regard. So, for Benzema personally, an amazing career at Real Madrid, 14 years. When he actually signed for the club, he was still living with his parents in Lyon, and went from a boy to a man, and done absolutely everything and won everything there was to win at club level. Fantastic footballer, obviously had some off-field issues, and that certainly impacted his time with the French national team. But in terms of Real Madrid, the send-off he got at the Bernabeu at the weekend was very special. It's a hard place to win over the supporters, and to stay there for 14 years and to have got that kind of send-off, I think shows you how much he was appreciated by everybody that sort of supports Real Madrid.
Well, they might be saying best of luck to Karim Benzema with heavy hearts, but I don't think they're going to be sorry to see the back of Eden Hazard.
No, absolutely not. I mean, this was and has proven to be an absolutely shocking transfer. Barely played in a big game. Even when he did play, never looked fully fit. The reports in Spain have always said that he arrived overweight and just never ever looked up to the task. I mean, it's difficult to know how much of that is down to Hazard's attitude, because he was always known as a lazy trainer in his time at Chelsea, and he was able to just ride that because he was so good when he turned up on a Premier League match day or a Champions League match day at Real Madrid. Because of the injuries, he was never able to get a run of games. Now, there will be some people that say, if you don't live the right way, that brings on injuries, and particularly as you get sort of older in life, you need to look after your body. Other people will just say it's unlucky. Without being on the inside, it's hard to know how much he dedicated himself to sort of trying to be a success at Real Madrid. It was a dream move for him. It hasn't worked out at all, and I'm really not sure sort of his level now, because when he played at the World Cup, he was nothing like the Hazard that people loved at Chelsea. So it's very difficult to know sort of where he will sort of find himself next. Some of his sort of Belgian colleagues, Alderweireld and Vertonghen, slightly older than Hazard, but they went back to Belgian football, and I'm not saying that that's where Hazard will go just yet, but his time at the top table definitely looks to be over.
In Serie A, Napoli were champions, and the Champions League spots go to Napoli, Lazio, Inter Milan and AC Milan. But it was, slightly surprised maybe to read that AC Milan are giving Paolo Maldini the gate.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, this is developing over the last 48 hours, with Paolo Maldini being sacked from his position as sort of one of the technical sporting director. A disagreement over the way that the club wants to recruit players, and also the type of investment they should be looking to bring in. Maldini, who one club legend when he played for Rossoneri, has been part of that revival. They reached the Champions League semi-finals, they won the Scudetto last season. He's gone. It looks like Pioli, the coach, might go with him. I mean, obviously, when there is a change in sort of the boardroom in terms of sort of who reports into to the sporting levels, there is usually a change of coach. And I think that maybe they would have done that anyway, but that might just hasten the sort of sacking or departure, at least, of Pioli. But Rafael Leao, their star player, only recently signed a new contract, and he was on Twitter when that news announced with just a thinking face emoji, so not giving much away, but the suggestion was that he's not happy with Maldini going. And I think it's just an unsettled sort of time for the club at the moment. I mean, some people might just think that they're just trying to grab the headlines away from their city rivals, Inter, who've got this massive Champions League final on Saturday. But it doesn't look good, I wouldn't say, for them at the moment. All the transfer targets that they reportedly had lined up for the summer have just been scrapped, and they're all almost starting again.
Just staying on the subject of departures, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, 156 goals in Serie A, has confirmed his retirement. How will he be remembered by fans of Italian football and indeed European football further afield?
I would say a legend, and never won the Champions League, so that will probably anger him somewhat. But I mean, everything else, he's done, particularly in. I mean, he was great for Ajax, but then in Italian football, he just played for all of the big teams and was a success just about everywhere he went. And even down to that last one, he didn't play as much when Milan won the Scudetto last season, but it was his signing the season before that actually people felt was really influential in changing the whole culture of the club. You know, they're such a big team in Italian football. They weren't thinking like a big team. They weren't acting like a big team. And Ibrahimovic, he kind of gets people thinking, in a different way. He thinks he's the best. He always, even when he's 40 plus, he still thinks he's he probably still thinks he should be winning the Ballon d'Or. But he made sure that everybody in that dressing room knew what it meant, to wear the red and black of Milan. And this wasn't just an easy ride. And I think that, he brought along a lot of those younger players. If you're looking for real, I suppose, failures. His time at Barcelona didn't go the way that it was supposed to. He always says that, he was one of the only ones that would ever stand up to Pep Guardiola, and there were a lot of lemmings in that dressing room who just did whatever Guardiola wanted, and he questioned some of the things that Guardiola sort of did, and Guardiola tried to change his style to get Ibrahimovic working within that Barcelona team for a little while, and then decided it wasn't. So that was probably the one time when it wasn't perfect for him. But even in his address to the Milan supporters at the end, he was whistled by the Verona fans, and he told them to be quiet, and that they were in the presence of somebody special, and it'd probably be one of the greatest days of their life just to hear him say goodbye as well. So he's not afraid of the limelight. He scored spectacular goals, a very unique player as well. You can't think of too many other people that played the game like Ibrahimovic did. So I think he'll go down as one of the sort of great strikers of his era, despite not winning the Champions League.
He most certainly was, but a controversial character. Looks like he's going to be staying in the Serie A, because Paris Saint-Germain seem to have lost interest in Jose Mourinho after his antics at the Europa League final. They might love him in Rome, but they don't seem to want him in Paris.
No, they certainly do love him in Rome, and I still can't understand completely why, because the football is not amazing, but he did win them the Conference League, and then he took them to a Europa League final when they qualified for the Europa League again. And I think maybe the Roma supporters see him as somebody that, fights for their cause. But, I'm sure sort of most people agree that he went way too far with the Anthony Taylor incident last week. We'll never know whether that's what sort of stopped him getting the Paris Saint-Germain job. It looks like Julian Nagelsmann is about to sort of step into that vacancy. But certainly something went wrong, because Mourinho was the heavy favourite at one stage, and he's sort of friend. Campos is the sporting director, and he himself sort of suggested he was leaving Roma at the end of the season, sort of after that Europa League final. So, certainly at that point, I think most people expected him to go to Paris. I would say PSG have had a lucky escape. I just think he sort of quite boring now, that kind of, the character sort of that he plays and sort of lives up to. And, I just think if you're Paris Saint-Germain, you just don't need that really. If the whole idea behind sort of the Qataris getting involved in football was to sort of promote themselves and, sort of be this kind of shining light in European football, I wouldn't have thought the way Mourinho plays his football sort of and the way that he acts is sort of fitting for that, really. So looks like being Nagelsmann, he had a rocky time, I suppose, at Bayern Munich. He's got about to get another big club very quickly. Be interesting to see how he does, because if he does badly, you're not quite sure where he goes next. So a lot of pressure will be on his shoulders.
Yeah, well, certainly not many ways you could make PSG less popular with real authentic football fans. Maybe appointing Jose might have been that. But just on PSG, and we're talking about big players that are departing, Lionel Messi is away. Where next for?
I'm pretty sure wherever he goes next, he'll be loved more than he was in Paris. He was booed off on his final appearance for them. Numbers-wise, he did okay, but they felt that his heart was never in that club, and that basically this season been about winning the World Cup and nothing else mattered. Barcelona are desperate to bring Messi back. Xavi has made absolutely no secret of that. He's spoken openly about the pursuit. The problem is that, you know, from a financial point of view, mentioned it sort of at the top of the segment, you know, the money that can be thrown around in Saudi Arabia, Barcelona, even Barcelona, who you know, can find the money when it suits them, are struggling to match anything like what the what can be offered in Saudi Arabia. There is also said to be interest from Inter Miami. I would have thought that they would be the third favourites in this race. I mean, for Messi, it comes down to, does he want an absolutely huge retirement sort of fund? And he, as you know, he already does work for Saudi Arabia anyway, you know, in sort of, and that was one of the issues at Paris Saint-Germain. He missed a training session to go and do a promotional video for the Saudi. So does he want to take the Saudi sort of money, or, you know, does he want one last shot at sort of European glory with Barcelona? I mean, my personal opinion is he got more than enough money, and he could probably still go to Saudi Arabia in a couple of years. I'd like to see him stay in Europe and play at Barcelona, but hard to say, really. I mean, Benzema's gone, Ronaldo's gone. Wouldn't be a huge surprise if Messi went the same way.
Yeah, would he make it in England? And also, sorry, departing for a sponsorship deal like that is nearly as bad as the League of Ireland footballer going to Love Island. But that's a story for another day. would Lionel Messi do it on a wet Tuesday in Stoke, etc. cliche?
Yeah, he would definitely sort of still be a success in the Premier League. I mean, you saw him at the World Cup. He was the best player at that. His numbers for Paris Saint-Germain have been good this season. I mean, and the French football is very physical. I mean, Neymar seems to end up with a serious injury sort of every season. Yeah, it's probably the closest in terms of physicality. It's probably of the sort of Europe's top leagues. It's the closest, I would say, to the Premier League. And you know, Messi still does fine. I mean, it, you know, it'd be a different story maybe if he was playing for a low team and they didn't have much of the ball. But if he was at, I don't know, Manchester City, for example, I'm sure he could absolutely thrive in that role at sort of Bernardo Silva play. So, I've no doubt that he's still got enough in him to be able to play any of Europe's top leagues. But the kind of that Saudi money is tempting for a lot of people at the moment.
Will it tempt Gundogan?
Gundogan is being more linked with sort of Barcelona himself, and also a few mentions for Arsenal, who seem to be after all of the Manchester City players. I'm not sure. I would say that Gundogan would probably stay in Europe. I mean, you know, he's so good again in the cup final on Saturday. If you haven't played for Barcelona or Real Madrid, it's very difficult, I think, for players to turn down those opportunities. And Gundogan has got the opportunity to go and play for Barcelona, or he could stay at Manchester City, or he could probably go to Saudi Arabia. I'd be disappointed if somebody at Gundogan's stage of his career, if he headed off. I think he's still got a lot to offer, whether it be for Man City, Barcelona or somebody else.
It's breaking my heart, all this talk of all these top players potentially going to Saudi Arabia. But
it's only like a couple of years ago it was China. That quickly fizzled out. Now we don't know if the Saudis if that'll be the same. You remember somebody like Oscar, he was playing for Chelsea. He was only in his mid-20s and he went off to Chinese football. And there will always be those offers, I suppose. It needs a real big sort of someone in their prime to go there, I think, to change the dynamic and the thinking of it. I think once the older players are there, it's still just seen as a bit of a joke league. If somebody in their peak goes, then that's when the whole thing begins to change.
Final question before we take a break, Mark, just on the Bundesliga. So Bayern Munich were champions in dramatic fashion. Dortmund, Leipzig, Union Berlin get the Champions League spots. We talked about earlier Maldini leaving Milan. Are Bayern Munich in a bit of a crisis at board level?
Yeah, so Salih Amazic, and he's gone. Olivier Kahn as well. Yeah, they are in a state of flux at the moment. There will be changes there. Despite winning the league, they were really unhappy with, you know, the fact that they only won it on goal difference. There's been some signings that haven't worked out. Somebody like Sadio Mane, for instance. Team Harmony has been all over the place. Manuel Neuer got involved in a bust up with Julian Nagelsmann, who was subsequently sacked. So things have not gone well for Bayern Munich this season, despite the fact they won the league. Like I said, it was only on goal difference. They had to make a managerial change. So it wasn't a big surprise that sort of people higher up paid the price for that by being sacked. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see who comes in there, because Thomas Tuchel seems to have gained more power on the basis of those departures.
Okay, great. So if Roddy Forsyth now joins us as we continue our football conversation, Paul Corry still live in studio as well. And Roddy, if we come to you, I know Stephen Kelly was on with me yesterday and talking about what Ange might bring to Spurs. Well, now I can pose the question of what Ange will bring to Spurs. Like, what is the situation? Firstly, what is the feeling up in Celtic at the moment with his departure?
Well, it's interesting, as you know, with social media, you'll get every range of opinion. Most people seem to be relatively happy, or not happy, but adjusted to the fact that Ange has gone, because he delivered while he was in the East End of Glasgow. Some have not, but they're in the minority. I thought the most telling phrase in Celtic's official response to his departure was delivered by the Hoops chairman, Peter Lawl, who said this afternoon, "We did all we could to keep him with us well into the future, but he wanted to take this new opportunity." So you get that key words there, well into the future. In other words, they offered him, by their standards, a good contract, but he had his mind set on going elsewhere. Most Celtic supporters, as I say, happy to wish him well. Some not so enchanted that he was gone so quickly after he had just become the only the fifth manager, Celtic manager, to win the Scottish domestic treble. One worry amongst the fans that is emerging is that he'll come shopping for some of the players he brought to Glasgow, with particular concern that he'd target favourite attackers like Jota and Kyogo, maybe also Rio Hatate. That seems to be bothering the Celtic fans more than the fact that he's actually gone at the moment.
Obviously, Roddy, Daniel Levy is delighted to get him. His positive mentality and fast attacking style of play will suit Spurs fans. But for himself, for Ange himself, Spurs was a natural progression into the Premier League. He's been Australian manager. He's been in the J Leagues, Scottish Premier Division, Premier League. It was always going to happen for him, wasn't it?
Well, you feel so, as long as he made it a good fist of it at Celtic Park. And although there are Spurs fans who've been saying he's coming from a B League, he's coming from a league where you don't have much pressure. Although anybody who's been manager of Celtic will tell you that pressure comes the moment your name is connected with the club. And by the way, and I don't know how this is going to develop, but there is a major fire in the vicinity of Celtic Park at the moment. Just about 40 minutes ago, we learned about that. Several fire engines and police vans have been in the vicinity. We don't think that it's actually the stadium, unless it's just the smoke from the contrail that Ange left on his way out. But yes, there are. There's a lot of names being already thrown up on social media and by the bookies, and of course we know that's a practice that quite often means that half of the names or more of them haven't any real connection, but they're there to excite interest. That's what we're seeing at the moment. But as I say, the principal theme on some of the main fan sites that I've looked at is, please Ange, don't come and take away our favourites.
Paul Corry, do you think that Ange will, and also a four-year deal, are you surprised with the length of the contract?
No, I'm not. I think he'll need it as well. I think that's a huge job. I really do. I think that's one of the more difficult ones to take over. You know, even if you were to compare that to Pochettino and Chelsea have recruited a lot in the last 12 months. Now, albeit some of those players haven't performed, the players are still in the building. I think Tottenham need a major shake-up there. If you think of the likes of Eric Dier, Ben Davies, have been there too long. They need fresh bodies in the building, and if you're stepping into that job and you're looking at a squad that needs major overhaul, the one thing that you don't want is to lose your best players. If Harry Kane leaves, that's another massive void that you have to fill. Conte left, they were in fourth or fifth. They finished in eighth. Like, they were in free fall for the remaining weeks of the season. So he's got a huge job to do there. He's mildly impressive. I really like the way he comes across in press conferences and the bits of clips that you see. I think the football that he played with Celtic is probably more in line with what Tottenham were used to seeing under Pochettino. So you would expect in time he will get it right, but there's a lot of things that need to change there, and he's going to need Daniel Levy to certainly open up his wallet and invest in that squad.
Roddy, obviously he was brought into Celtic Park to rebuild Celtic and get the league title back from Rangers. He's going to have to go in and rebuild in Spurs. Do you think he'll be of the mentality, we'll take as much money as we can for Harry Kane and build a bigger squad?
Well, the interesting thing for me is the style of play that he brought in Glasgow. Now, if you can get the best players in your league, if you make sure that they're fit and fast, you will almost certainly win everything or come close to it. And that's what happened. It had happened with Brendan Rodgers beforehand. And one thing that you might want to look at is his European record. Played 17, won 6, drawn 2, lost 9. So it wasn't in Celtic's favour there, although they were up against the likes of Real Madrid. And I saw that I was at that game, and they held their own for half of the first half with Real Madrid before finally the class told. He's going to have to do something similar in England, but you can't just buy the best players and make them fast and fit in the Premier League, because there's so much competition, there's so much money, so he's going to find it much tougher. But he's been through this before on other occasions, as has been mentioned. As I say, for me, what will be interesting is how quickly he manages, if he does manage to make Tottenham a force again. I would hope that he does, and I think that he will. But speed is of the essence when you're competing in a league as competitive as that.
Roddy, plenty of names banded about for the Celtic job now, as you mentioned. Who are, though, in your opinion, the realistic candidates, and how big a task will they have on their hands?
Well, let me just throw the names that have been mentioned this afternoon. Patrick Vieira, Graham Potter, Kevin Muscat, Michael Carrick, Marcelo Gallardo, David Moyes, even Brendan Rodgers, who angered the Hoop support when he left them for Leicester City. Once said that his greatest dream was to manage Celtic, and then he said he would give his life for Leicester, and of course the Green Brigade greeted his departure with a banner that said, "You traded immortality for mediocrity." So it looks as though he's got a few people he'd have to win over. Jesse March has been mentioned, but I don't think they'll want to bring someone in who hasn't got some kind of recent winning pedigree. David Moyes is another one, of course, former connection with the club. And Enzo Maresca, assistant to Pep at Man City. So if you want me to pick out of all of that lot, I'm sorry, mate, you'll just have to wait until the dust settles a little bit. I've been through this too many times. Don't forget that prior to Ange coming, Steve Howe kept Celtic waiting for about 4 or 5 months. He said he was coming, it seemed he was coming, and then it began to stretch into the summer. And Ange was a real surprise package when he turned up. We had all had to scrabble about looking up our J-League statistics to find out what he had done there, and of course it was the prelude to wonderful moments at times for the Celtic support.
Absolutely. Right, gentlemen, we are just out of time for a football chat, so I'm going to go round the houses. Roddy, you wouldn't give me an answer, so Paul Curry, who's going to be next Celtic manager?
I could see it being Brendan Rodgers.
Oh, okay. You'll be, Celtic fans be delighted with that. Mark Langdon, you have the final word. Who's going to be next Celtic manager?
I was going to say Rodgers as well, but to be different, I'll go Moyes. I think if Moyes doesn't win this final tomorrow night, maybe he becomes available.
Okay.
And Ruby mentioned Neil Lennon. Huh?
Neil Lennon. Keep your hands off Damien Duff, former Celtic coach.
To be honest, I think I'll just ring Darren with Desmond. No point in asking you that.
Good luck with that, mate.
Roddy Forsyth, Mark Langdon, Paul Curry, thank you all very, very much. We're going to take a short break, and then myself and Ruby are going to be chatting to Adam Taylor about the World Youth Archery Championships that are coming to Limerick.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. So we're going to change direction completely now and take both myself and Shane Dawson out of our comfort zones, because we're going to discuss archery, and both of us are keen bowmen, maybe the right word, exactly how little I know about archery, but I'm delighted to say that Adam Taylor does join us on the line to discuss the Working Archery Youth Championships, which are taking place at UL between the 1st and 9th of January. 600 athletes from 60 countries. Adam, how are you?
I'm wonderful. And don't worry, Bowman is a perfectly good term. Don't worry about that. That's a great term.
That was some guess, wasn't it?
Because yes.
Archer probably would have been the right word.
Archer's more official.
You got the term right, but you got the month wrong. It's July 1st to July 9th, so it is. That's in a couple of weeks' time. You said January. Yeah. January. I said, we'd be waiting a while. It's like, this is some promo now if we're giving a bit of airtime.
Definitely. I'm already thinking about the winter months.
Adam, though, it's coming up in a couple of weeks. So tell us all about it, your role, I suppose, in bringing it here, and how big a deal this is for Limerick and indeed for archery in Ireland.
Oh, thank you. First of all, for the opportunity. This is a huge deal, especially with the Shannon region, Limerick University and Limerick Council all recognise this is a great tourism opportunity, because you're going to get about 600 athletes, 200 odd coaches, and a couple of hundred family members all coming over from literally all over the world. I took registration today from New Zealand and yesterday from places like Sri Lanka and stuff like that. So I've a huge collection of people coming from all over the place to spend a week in Limerick. And I tell you, without University of Limerick's help, they helped put together a huge bid for this. We were competing against countries like Madrid, Poland, America, that kind of stuff, just to get this. So it was hard fought. We won it, and now it's all about putting on a great show and showing how great Ireland is.
Anytime a big event like this happens in a so-called minority sport, if Ireland do well in the cricket or something like that, like, what will this do for archery in Ireland? And where is archery in Ireland in terms of playing population and so on?
Well, I'll tell you, the joke always is everyone's an archer because everyone has done it at some summer camp or something like that. But like, there's clubs springing up all over the place. COVID was very, very hard, but we're a resilient group, a bunch of people, because we're used to standing out in the rain all the time. So we're growing, we're catching up. And this youth event is helping massively because it's managed to give a bit of direction towards the younger archers and say, look, this is a youth championship. You're up against the best of the best of the world. The people you're going to see on this pitch have been at international competitions all over the place. Some people are in Tokyo. Some people are going to LA and Paris. So this is giving people a huge steer and direction. So there's a couple of kids, when I say kids, they're under 21, but they're you know, training every single day now and pushing hard to try and do as well as they can for Team Ireland when this event kicks off on the 1st.
Seeing is believing, or so the phrase goes. Yeah. I think it's one of the greatest phrases that was ever brought up. But we do have proper archers here, and we do have a couple of people who are going to compete at this youth championship, and an Irish person coming to the fore will be the best publicity you can get.
That's exactly it. So we've got like Rogan and Sam, who are our lead compound people. We've got Melina, who's our up and coming female recurver. So these are people who are like going, right, okay, they got their college exams on, they're done now, and they're working really hard. Like Rogan and Sam joined me over there at the European Championships in the UK there, and they're you know, hitting it with the big boys now. It's not long before you'll start seeing them on TV, I reckon.
You mentioned a couple of terms there now that I want clarified for myself. Compound.
Yeah. Compound. So if you were to watch television and you'll see archery, you know, in its style, you know, that's your normal recurve style. Compound is what the Americans really love it, because it's mainly a hunting bow, but this is all geared towards sports. So it's hugely technical. So it's got, the way we describe it, it looks like an archery bow that you would recognize, but it's got wheels on the top. And that just means they can pull back a lot more weight, which means they can shoot a lot further and a lot more accurate. So they have smaller targets to shoot at than you would have seen on TV. So they have to be extremely accurate, like a little bit of breathing in and out, and that's them knocked out of a competition completely.
Right, so you've got, that's two divisions. How many more have you got? Longbow?
No, unfortunately. Well, you could be a longbow at an archery club, no problem. There are longbow competitions. The youth event particularly is mainly just recurve and compound. It is growing, and I'm hoping, and we're pushing hard that this comes around, if it comes around again, that we can get barebow and longbow in, which is your more traditional archery, you know, where you can nearly make your bow yourself if you go and find a long enough piece of wood in the park somewhere.
And what's the pickup in clubs? How many clubs are dotted around? If people are listening,
we are kind of like, as you call us, a minority sport. We are everywhere. You know, a lot of GAA halls have us in there. I'd say there are about 40 to 50 odd clubs on the island of Ireland, and they're dotted all over the place. There's huge uptake in the colleges in particularly. So there's a massive college competition that goes on like every couple of weeks. There's an inter-varsity competition. So it's a growing sport, but it's we're not getting out there. So thank you for letting us, you know, talk our piece to the nation, as they say.
Well, no, you're teaching us, and you can play it all year round.
All year round, yeah, it's indoor, outdoor. The older I get now, I'm becoming more of a fair weather archer, so the summer and indoor are my go-to. But there's a class of archery which I would highly recommend everyone get into. It's called field archery. It's basically you go into the woods, the targets are up in the trees, down the valleys, and you go around and kind of, you know, shoot the targets from a distance, and that's a fun day out, you know, walking around.
Have you a website for that?
Yeah, archery.ie. Everything's there. All the club finders are there, and you can find a club. I'd say there's a club within 20 minutes drive of everyone in the country, to be honest with you.
Ooh, that's a big call.
That's a big call. I know, but there's a
text
there's a
range. 51552 if you can't find one within 20 minutes.
Exactly.
Of you.
We'll find us. Yeah, we'll set one up as well if we can. But no, they are everywhere, and they're particularly, again, as the many fields, and again, other sports lend us their pitches, which we can use as well. So we're slowly becoming a big sport. Slowly, I will stress that word slowly.
Listen, Adam, it's been a pleasure chatting, and myself, Ruby, and indeed Marie, we're going to be keeping a close eye on archery over the next while. As Ruby mentioned at the start there, the World Archery Youth Championships putting international spotlight onto Limerick. 600 athletes, 200 coaches from 60 countries in UL from July 1st to July 9th of this year, and the ambition to make Limerick the European capital of archery events, and hopefully it does go well. Okay, from archery to golf, Ruby, we're going to be chatting to Gary Murphy on the shock merger of all things golf in a few moments. I'm sticking with us here on Game On 2FM.
Game On.
Golf. Welcome back to Game On, where we're going to discuss the breaking news of the day, and Gary Murphy joins us on the line. The PGA Tour, DP World Tour and LIV Golf are set to merge. Gary Murphy, did you ever think you'd see the day?
No, I didn't, Ruby. I was absolutely shocked when I saw it come through today. So it's, yeah, and the details are very vague on it. So I'm sure there's a lot to play out on this. It's a bit sad for Tom McKibben, who won his first tournament.
We hope
Gary, we just on Sunday, and he probably won't get an inch in the column. So, in 2 days, but, you got me there, Ruby. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you know again, Gary.
It's fascinating. Don't know how it's all going to play out, but there'll be a lot of people with disappointed, a lot of people with humble pie smashed all over them. So, it's I don't know how it's going to play out, really.
No one knows. Is there a climb down here from someone? As you said, the details are vague, so we don't really know, but. To think that the PGA are bringing LIV in, to me, would seem like a little bit of a climb down.
I actually think it's a climb down from the Saudis, because I really don't see how it could ever make any financial sense going down the road that they went down. And I think they've climbed down and they've kind of gone in and thrown a shed load of money at the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour and said, listen, you know, that's probably the only way they can see an end game. And then obviously from the bartering that's gone on from DP World, because they brought the Saudis into the equation initially, and then they got an amazing deal, which Paul McGinley, you know, should be hugely proud of, because Paul had a very strong arm and all of that. And now I think it's made, you know, European golf and global golf more as one, really, which can only be good for the game, because it was never going to, you know, to have things continue on the way they were was no good for anybody, really. And the players are going to benefit enormously from this. Like, this is essentially going to be, you know, in horse racing speak, probably Cheltenham, you know, 20 times a year. So, like, the money these players are going to make. I know lads have jumped ship and got paid and, you know, they're now going to come back into the fold. How all that's going to work out, I'm not sure. But I think the money going forward is going to be astronomical. I don't know how good that is for the game, but if it trickles down, I think fine. But it's certainly going, I think Greg Norman's probably, he's out of the equation now, which is no bad thing. But how...
I think Gary is...
I can't wait to see the nuts and bolts with, but if you're on that... If you're on tour doing well now, it's only, you know, only going to get better for you.
Just a bit of background, as we hope Gary is still with us. So it's Yasser Al Rumayyan has been named chairman of the newly created PGA LIV Golf entity, an entity that is yet to have even a name. And Yasser Al Rumayyan is governor of Saudi's $620 billion investment fund, chairman of oil giant Saudi Aramco, chairman of Premier League side Newcastle United, board member at Hoover and SoftBank, and right-hand man to the crown prince in Saudi Arabia. So essentially, Saudi Arabia now runs professional golf globally. Given Jay Monahan's comments and his stance when LIV Golf originally came about, and that interview that's been doing the rounds on social media, has any player ever had to apologise for playing on the PGA Tour? And now you have players like Colin Morikawa saying, oh, I love finding out news on Twitter, and you have so many people involved in the PGA Tour who haven't been consulted with this, and this has just happened now. Does it make Jay Monahan's position untenable leading the golfers who stuck with the PGA Tour?
Well, yes and no, because you can't have the inmates running the asylum. Like, you have to put people in place to run the tour. The player's job is to play on the tour, and it's only going to be stronger, probably, and richer and better. So I think it's quite trite if some players are going to complain about this. you know, their job is to go play golf and entertain and, you know, get paid for it. So, you know, the tour, even from when the LIV guys came in, you know, they're playing for double the prize money they were 24 months ago. So the players can't complain. You know, they're going to be on a minimum of, you know, a couple of million a year just to turn up and keep a status on the tour. So they're only going to get richer. The top end are going to get richer. So from a player's point of view, it's phenomenal. I wouldn't be complaining in any shape or form. It's just the political football that's going to get kicked about. You know, and the Saudis getting in, they're basically bought golf. What are they going to buy next? Is it going to be the Super Bowl next? So I think that's more of a worry going forward. You know, even if you look from a football sense, players going out to Saudi to play for a couple of years and getting 100 million a year. So even, you know, how rich is golf going to go now? Because the golfers don't get paid anything like that. But I hope the trickle-down effect happens. You know, I think there's a lot of professional golfers in the world that actually struggle at it. So, you know, if the Asian Tour becomes stronger, if the European Tour becomes stronger, it's only better for the game. But I'd say we're going to be, you know, it's going to be monopoly figures that are going to come out of this. But I actually think it's the Saudis that backed down and realised if we don't get into bed with these guys that we're never going to sustain in the sport. But where it goes, I'm not quite sure. Where the majors will play into all of this, they have to be protected and minded. I think that's hugely important. But it's fascinating news and completely out of left field.
It most certainly is, and it is an evolving story. Obviously, all LIV golfers who are suspended indefinitely by the PGA and DP World Tour will be able to reapply for membership from the end of 2023. That, for me, will rule them out of this year's Ryder Cup, but they will all be able to play in it there in 2027. So, hey, golf's one big happy family again. Gary Murphy, thanks so much for taking our call.
Sinead, Ruby, that is all we have time for. Thanks for the company this evening. Big thanks to all our contributors and indeed to our listeners tuning in and to Andrew O'Connor producing the show and Laura Lee Davis, our BCO. Bennett De Silva is up next on 2FM, so stay with us. Marie Crowe will be back tomorrow with Game On from 6. So from all of us, it is. Bye for now.